Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Classroom 33 podcast. Pastor Dustin here with Steve Prudian. And today we are moving on from Job 4 to Job 5, and we're still talking about Eliphaz. But before we get into it, Steve, you brought a very curious object in. You brought a thing of salt in with you today. What is that all about?
Salt is like many friends that we could have. Eliphaz is actually salt to Job. What he is if you ever heard the expression rubbing salt into the wounds.
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, Eliphaz is a perfect example of rubbing salt into wounds. And do you know what happens when you rub salt into a wound?
It's painful and it dries it out.
Yes, it is. It's painful, it dries out, but it becomes an irritant.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in our lives, there's things we don't want to hear because they're too salty. But sometimes it's the very salty things we need to hear because it's the salt that gives us an awareness. And salt also purifies things that are wrong or ill in our lives.
Yes, it does. Yeah, a little bit of salt is good. Too much salt is not.
Yeah, look at most of the cars that are older in Iowa, and you can see what too much salt, why it's not.
So, what is it exactly about Eliphaz?
Eliphaz is actually an archetype.
Okay.
And he's an archetype of a person who represents your benefit, your good. But in reality, he's only out for his own benefit.
Okay.
Many times when people come to us and they want to offer us a helping hand, they're really offering us to help themselves.
Yeah, I see that a lot. Actually, it's become actually kind of a pretty common social media trend for people to go and give hundreds of dollars to a homeless person on the street and take them out and buy them lunch and do all this fancy stuff. But the reality is they're not doing it for the homeless person. They're doing it for themselves, for their social media following.
That's one of the reasons. It sounds like what Jesus accused the Pharisees of.
Yeah, that's he absolutely did. Especially the one who is making a big deal about going and making his offering, and then the poor widow right next to him gives two very small coins after he deposits a large sum. And he said what the Pharisee did was wrong, and what the poor widow did was right.
Absolutely right. The Pharisees do it for their own glory, for their own accreditation. The poor widow, she had no glory. She didn't have any accreditation, or nor did she even desire it.
No, all she desired was to give to God what belongs to him.
That's right, everything she had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dustin, one of the two things is that Eliphaz and his two other friends plus his servant, they actually, if we had to look at them today in this case, okay, we're going to go to court.
Ooh, and I've been to court.
And Eliphaz would actually be the prosecuting district attorney.
Okay.
Okay, and Eliphaz, even though it doesn't say that in the book of Job, Eliphaz is taking on the role as being the lead attorney to prosecute Job. In Eliphaz, even though you may not see it, you have to look very closely at the verses. He's much like an attorney. He can twist words.
Mm-hmm.
In Job chapter 4, he sounds like that he is just trying to get to the truth. Nothing wrong with that, right?
usually.
Eliphaz starts out in his first dialogue with Job, complimenting Job.
Right.
Which is a tactic often used by attorneys to throw you off the track.
Yes, it is.
In Job chapter 5, Eliphaz subtly makes innuendos, hints about the 10 things that is charged against Job. Now, in Job chapter 6, we're going to see Job's rebuttal and why he was angry at this so-called friend who came as a friend, but he came more like an attack dog.
Well, and you used the analogy of the prosecuting attorney. You could also call that person an accuser, which is another translation of the Hebrew word Satan, Satan. So he's taking the role of Satan attacking Job directly and not from far away where he can't be seen and he's not known. He's taking that role right there as the accuser.
Actually, there's a phrase that we use today, and the phrase is, we're friends like that, who needs enemies?
Yes. You'd say that about any of Job's friends.
What I'd like to do today, Dustin, is we got to ask ourselves a question.
All right.
Okay, and the question is this, is how would you react if a friend told you, subtly, what's wrong with you?
I'm going to tell you, probably not well.
Would you expect a friend to attack you?
Not usually, no.
Some of the deepest wounds a human being can experience is actually a betrayal, an attack by a friend.
Yes, it is.
And we know of one person who was betrayed by a friend, and it led him to sacrifice his life.
Yep.
Okay. Well, in Job chapter 5, without going through all of the text and reading all the text, I would like to start with the first thing that Eliphaz accuses Job of. That first thing is he accuses Job of being an angry man. And we know that angry men do things out of anger.
Right.
So subsequently, if you follow that trail, Job's life, because he's accused of being an angry man, he operated out of anger. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, what is the reason why a person would be angry?
Well, there's a lot of reasons to be angry. Usually, I'd say fear is a big reason. Lots of people have anger that stems out of fear and things like that. Or betrayal, being attacked, feeling like things are against you.
There are a lot of things that make a person angry. One of those things that makes a person angry is a spirit called hate. Hateful people seem to be angry people. And the reason for it is if they have the spirit of hate, they lack the spirit of love.
Right.
Well, the first point was in verse 2 was anger. The second point is on verse 3, Eliphaz tells Job that he's betrayed God. The third point, and we can talk about any of these as we go down if you want, stop and talk about one or many in particular, but we are limited in time. The third charge that Eliphaz brings to Job is found in verse 4 and 5. His explanation is Job lost everything because it was his fault. The fourth charge is in verse 6, which is really the hinge point of all of the friend's arguments, is that he says, Job, you're sinful.
Yeah, and let's pause on that one, because we are all sinful, and there are consequences for our sins in our life, but not everything bad that happens to us is a consequence of our sin. We know, and if you've spent time studying the Bible and living in a faith that is based on relationship, you know, and it's hard, but faith grows in the hard times. The dark times produce endurance and perseverance, and, you know, consider it pure joy to be afflicted, because that will create a deeper and greater faith. And we know that. So we can say very certainly and securely that not everything bad that happens to us is because of sin and because of any fault of our own. And it's got to hurt to have this friend tell you repeatedly that it's your fault. Your children died because of something you did or didn't do. And in our society, we do recognize that as being wrong. We don't accuse people like that. We don't put that and shoulder that blame on them. But that's a pretty horrible thing to do as a friend.
Mm-hmm. And who did we say? What did we say Eliphaz represents?
Salt.
Salt, okay.
Salt.
He says some salty statements. And salty statements burn. They sting. Okay.
Yes,
actually,
they do.
It gets worse. The next thing the fifth charge, which is found in verse 8, is that Eliphaz actually accuses Job of multiple sins. He accuses them of different categories of sins.
Which is really interesting, because he's accusing him of all of these things, and there's no Ten Commandments yet. You know, during the time, we know this is during the time of Abraham. We're not entirely sure where, if this is, you know, before or after the circumcision of Isaac and all of that covenant promise and all of that. But people have known about sin forever.
Right from the garden, they knew about sin.
They knew about sin. They knew what sin was. God's law has been written on our hearts.
That's right.
From day one, going all the way back. And maybe the stone tablets described it and emphasized a couple of things, but this has always been known. That's just something that came to my head here.
You're absolutely right. Actually, God wrote his will upon our conscience.
Mm-hmm.
However, he gives us free will to follow his will.
He does.
Well, we're not done with Eliphaz yet. He gets down to actually calling Job a name. He calls Job a devil. He says that Job is dishonest and he's crafty. And if you look at the origin of the word crafty, it's synonymous with the word devil, because it's a characteristic of Satan.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the devil's favorite tricks, is to put his attributes onto us, and call us the things that he is and try and make us believe that.
Well, you know what?
And I'm also going to add that Job does have a hard time rebutting this, because you're trying to prove a negative at that point. You've been accused of something.
Guilty.
You're just guilty. You've been accused of something. There's no proof either way, except for the people who are nearest and dearest to you. The people that know your character and know this is wrong.
But they've distanced themselves from him as well.
Right.
And the whole town has distanced themselves from him.
Well, he's kind of a living plague at this moment from the outside view.
That's exactly right. The seventh charge that Eliphaz brings against Job is he says that Job is too proud. He's been blinded by his success. That Job rests upon his success and nothing else. Any comments?
Just more of the same. How do you prove a negative? How does Job
is going to rebut this in chapter 6. But I want to take us, just for those who may not go beyond this point.
Right.
I want to let you know that for every prosecutor, that there is a defender.
Yes, there is.
And in this particular book, God himself steps up as the defender of Job and leads the attack upon the three accusers of Job. Who has the most weight?
God does.
God does. Okay. So, the eighth area of attack is this. It's found in verses 15 and 16. Eliphaz accuses Job as being a bad slave master, as a wicked slave master, of mistreating his servants.
And again, we know from the introduction of the book, this is not correct.
This is not correct. Apparently, the prosecutor has not read the introduction, or he's not done enough research, okay, into who the man really Job is.
Yep.
He is just looking at the circumstances surrounding Job.
Well, a lot of prosecutors today actually do kind of the same thing that Eliphaz is doing here. You know, I spent 9 years as a police officer, and I'm familiar with prosecuting attorneys. And not all of them, I will say not all of them, but there are a few that love to pile on charges. They keep adding things and adding things, and, you know, statutorily, maybe they're correct, maybe they're not, maybe they're reaching and stretching. But the goal is to get something to stick. If I throw enough, something is going to stick. And that really seems like what Eliphaz is doing here. He has this idea in his head that Job's guilty. And he's accusing Job of everything he can think of, hoping that something will stick. And I don't, you know, we talked about it before. It's not for Job. He's not doing it for Job's sake. He wants to be right. He wants to be
self-justified.
He wants to be self-justified.
Self-justified.
He wants to be vindicated in his own accusal of his friend. So he's throwing everything at him. And if one thing sticks, then he's justified in the whole thing. Hmm. Everything he said is okay. Because how is right.
If one thing sticks, he's proved his point. Well, you know, there's some things that's interesting even an ass can tell the truth sometimes, which we know from the Bible.
Yeah.
Okay? One of the things that starts out as a charge against Job in verse is the ninth point, but it's in verses 17 through 27, versus reading the whole thing.
Right.
What Eliphaz says, there is some truth in what he has to say here, but he shrouds this truth because of his premonition or his premise that Job is guilty. But he does say this as an instruction. And the instruction is this. His is that he says God heals. God does heal.
Mm-hmm.
God delivers. God can deliver. God restores. We know that Jesus came to restore all of us. Okay?
Yep.
That God provides safety. That God can bless the family and he can provide us a good life. Those are all truths.
Yes, they are.
Now, why would a man who is on the dog or on the attack, okay, against his friend, come up and say those things? Why do you think he would say those things?
They all make Job look guilty. It's the same reason that we have people later on in the Old Testament and even into the New Testament misusing Proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
Proverbs paints a picture of very clear black and white. If you do good, God's good to you. If you do bad, bad things happen. Well, that's from a standpoint of perspective of perfection. In a world that exists in perfection, yes, you do good things, God's good to you, and you'll be punished for the bad things you do. And ultimately, that is what happens. But in this very short temporal existence, it's not always visible that way. So he uses that truth about God to make it seem even more condemning for Job, that you must have done something absolutely terrible, totally wicked, because otherwise God would not have taken away all of those blessings.
Mm-hmm. In a pre-court setting, if the district attorney laid out all of his charges against the person that they want to prosecute, oftentimes that same person who is leveling these charges will throw out a bone, and that's called a plea deal.
Yep.
In this particular case, this is a plea deal. What he's saying is, Job, you can have all of this if you just admit that you're guilty. Okay? Admit you're guilty, you can have all of this. But Job, what does he know? What is Job famous for?
His righteousness.
He's going to stand upon the fact that he is righteous before God. And he will talk about that again in Job chapter 6 when he does his rebuttal. But that sounds like a pretty good thing, that God would heal us, God will deliver us, God would restore us, God would provide safety, God would bless the family, and God would give us good life. That sounds like a pretty good deal if I'd only confess one thing.
Confess falsely, even. Which is a lie,
right.
Which is a sin.
Uh-huh.
And so he's not going to get... All right, we could go on with that all day.
Okay. The last thing.
The last
10,
thing.
The last thing that Eliphaz tells Job, like Job hasn't done this already. Job is actually asking for this right now, okay? But Eliphaz says, you need to go and listen to God. You need to go and listen to God. Is that good advice?
Yeah, it's great advice.
Yeah, it's good advice. The way that Eliphaz wants Job to go and listen to God is Eliphaz does it with a supposition. And the supposition is, Job, go listen to God and let him tell you what you're guilty of.
Right. Right.
So subsequently, once we get through this part of it, in the class, in reading through the text, okay, some of these statements are made by Eliphaz, put into a way that we can understand. And some of these things are actual questions. Here's one question that we're probably going to discuss in the class on Sunday. God hurt you to heal you. True or false?
Well, that's totally true. We've already... Yeah, you definitely don't want to drink the salt. Drink your coffee. We kind of already talked about that, how God does send us trials in our life to build that faith. And sometimes the purpose of that is to heal something else. I can speak to that in my own life. I won't get into it because we're running over on our time. But I've experienced in my own life how one trial that increased faith, increased trust, built on that foundation, healed something unrelated. So I say absolutely true.
You're absolutely right. Oftentimes I refer to the hurt of God as the light of God. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes to get your attention, he has to turn on a light. And the only way you're going to pay attention and look to the light is if you have to.
Amen. Amen. All right, Steve, I think that does it for this week. What is on the schedule for next week?
Well, we'll do a preview of Job chapter 6, some of its highlights and what it means, and possible areas for discussion.
Okay.
But you got to understand, this is the beginning of Job's defense. And you will find that Job has to give multiple defenses to multiple friends. One person he knows not at all because it's the servant.
Right.
And that they do not stop with their initial charge, because we see them popping up again with a second round of accusations. However, Job's advocate is God himself. And in the end, because God wins, Job wins.
As always, God's victory is something to look forward to. All right, Steve. Well, thank you very much for coming in, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Have a good day to you, too.